Is there a correlation between climate change and mental health?
Absolutely. So often when we speak climate, we speak about the visible impact, property loss or health impacts. These are the visible impacts that we speak about, but there is a greater challenge, the impact on mental health.
Hello and welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. Deepa Anand has been involved in the development sector for over a decade. She is the CEO and co-founder of Sustera Foundation, an NPO working in the space of climate change and sustainable development. Her main focus is on creating resilient communities through the engagement of youth and women via capacity building, community projects, and climate literacy. Being a parent, teacher, traveler, and planet lover has shown her the importance of being empathetic, resourceful, dynamic, and collaborative to create networks for impactful work. Hi, Deepa. Welcome to Revolutionary Woman. How are you this evening?
Hey, Tess. Thank you for having me on your podcast. It's amazing here, though summer is setting in soon, but still it's a wonderful evening here too.
Oh, wow. Summer already? Oh, my goodness. Or at least it's starting to. Okay. So you grew up in Trivandrum, Kerala. What was it like for you growing up in, am I saying it correctly, Trivandrum?
Yes, Trivandrum or Thiruvananthapuram. That's my native town. Mm-hmm. Yes, growing up was super here because it's still green. Kerala is one of the greenest places in India. Mm-hmm. And we have everything from the mountains to the seas here in a very small state, very biodiverse. And mm-hmm. I grew up by a river with a lot of friends, you know. Mm-hmm. It was totally a happy place growing up.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So I read that you've always loved animals and plants. Where did that love come from?
My mother was and is a plant lover. So and inherently somehow I was an animal and plant lover. Uh-huh. Maybe that's what has been drawn me to the current space I am working in also. So, I mean, there's no specific reason. I just love them. That's it.
Okay. So I read that your interest in teaching began when you taught juniors in high school. What was it about teaching that interested you?
So I've always been a people's person. I like conversations. Mm-hmm. More than teaching, it's more of facilitating and listening to them. That uh-huh. space. Uh-huh. And since I had a lot of friends, automatically, and I was a good student too. Mm-hmm. Maybe my comprehension was better. I don't know whatever reason. And I was able to explain things in clarity too. Mm. So I had friends and juniors uh-huh. coming up to me. And it was fun for me because I got to spend time with them.
Oh, that's
so
true.
Slowly, without being aware that I was teaching or facilitating learning, I got into that space.
Okay. So do you come from a family of educators?
No. Oh, okay. I wouldn't say my senior, my ancestral generation, no, they have not been. But my sister, elder sister, she is a teacher. And the younger one is also, she's a clinical psychologist, but she's working with students. Yes.
Okay. Well, it's okay. Yeah, so what lessons did your parents impart on you growing up?
Yeah, so that has been very, very deep. Because I've seen both my parents full of empathy, joy, the spirit of giving, and, just being resilient. That is something which has stayed with me a lot. And I strongly feel what I am is from them majorly. Mm. So, and my father was abroad for quite some time when we were growing, three sisters and a brother. And I've seen my mother, look after us as a single parent at that time, not technically single, but most of the time she had to take care of us. Mm-hmm. So how resilient was she? And she also was a person who used to be sporty. She used to engage in the activities that our residential association had. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, she used to engage herself stitching, crocheting, trying out recipes, all these things. So I've seen her multifaceted, and that is something which at that time I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But now I see myself, reflecting her a lot. Huh. And also my father, he also was a very empathetic person. I have seen him mingle with anyone financially and socially forward or otherwise in the same wavelength.
Okay.
So that is something which has stayed with me too. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Okay, so you are the co-founder, director, and head of community initiative at Sistera Foundation. Can you tell me what Sistera is about and what your role entails?
Yes, so this journey began long ago when I was kind of, along with the facilitating learning, I also was an active volunteer in a lot of engagements when I was in Chennai after marriage. Mm-hmm. And also coming back to Trivandrum, I was a part of another social organization where I was mentoring a lot of youth in social giving, mm-hmm. Which is beyond charity. So like kind of making audio files for the visually impaired, spending time with the geriatric needy people, scribing for the visually impaired. Wow. And we used to conduct fundraisers for cancer and kidney patients also. So these were learning spaces. And since I was mentor and kind of helping a lot of youth, when my current co-founder, he finished his climate studies in the Tata Institute of Social Science and came back and said, we need to kind of focus on certain things because climate is something which is very important. Mm-hmm. And I was like asking him whether that involves youth, women, education. Mm-hmm. He said that is the main vertical. So then he has said, I am ready to learn about climate. And that's how we started Sistera Foundation in 2017. It's been a long road now. I've learned a lot because this was a totally new field for me at that time. Uh-huh. But basically, as I said, I have been a plant, animal, people lover. So it was not a long leap. But yes, learning the science of it took some time. But what has been a wonderful journey. And here I am. But I just, since you asked about the start of it, so we started in 2017, focusing on converting the global sustainable development goals into a regional language and working with school children majorly. So regionalizing the context of global policies connected to climate, majorly the sustainable development goals is something we were looking into. Uh-huh. And also as a teacher, I was actively engaged in teaching students in government schools, especially in Alappuzha, which is a waterlogged area. Mm-hmm. Through experiential, you know, like the mud map and all activity. But 2018 saw the worst flood hit Kerala, mm-hmm. and suddenly climate became something very relatable for all of us.
Yeah.
And since then, we have been growing mm-hmm. through our verticals of capacity building, community programs, and climate literacy.
Wow. Okay. I actually went on your site and I love your mission, which is, our mission is to cultivate this future through innovative initiatives that nudge positive change, influence governance, and inspire action, ensuring a healthier, greener, and more resilient India. So how do you make sure that communities do get involved with your work? And I mean, have you faced challenges when you work with communities regarding climate change and sustainability?
Yes, often the climate literacy doesn't reflect so easily on ground. Like half the community, most of the community that we meet, they are not aware that whatever they are going through might be due to climate change. Mm-hmm. And also climate change can be natural as well as anthropogenic as in human caused. Mm-hmm. So these very thin lines of learning are often not reflected clearly at the community level because they directly connect to their daily livelihood and spaces of social living.
Yeah.
So we directly cannot go to community by telling we are working in climate and sustainability because these are all jargons which are not easily relatable to.
Yeah.
But we try to kind of engage with youth and women in mm-hmm. an interesting manner, kind of doing activities which are more understandable or relatable to them, like kind of understand your strengths, understand your challenges and what is happening in the ecosystem around you, how is it impacting you, and then connecting it to the larger climate narrative. That is how we go, rather than talk about climate science directly.
Yeah.
But we do climate literacy directly in colleges where, you know, there is already a level of learning and they can relate to some sort of science.
Right.
So I myself, as I said earlier, I was, this whole world of understanding climate change was new to me. Mm-hmm. So I used to place myself in that space and think how I should be speaking or engaging if I didn't know it from scratch.
Right. Yeah.
So our designings of the curation of the experiential activities was based on the understanding that if we didn't know anything, how would we kind of want to learn about it?
Okay. So what more should we be doing to make sure that we pay attention to what's going on with regards to climate change?
So climate change is very, it kind of, it's a global phenomenon, but yes, the impacts are very local. And also the vulnerability is very differential when it comes to different communities. Mm. And also within communities, different, you know, people of different layers of society, mm-hmm. as well as when you come into the nitty-gritties of gender, you know, class, all those things. So we need to be very clear on whom are we addressing, mm-hmm. and through which system or route that should be addressed. Okay. So right now, as I said, our focus is youth and women, but we definitely look at a holistic, collaborative way of addressing challenges. So we strongly believe in participatory. Mm-hmm. So we make sure that we work with the governance, with the private stakeholders, with the community, mm-hmm. or with the immediate community, the larger community. Right. And in all these, our focus would be youth and women.
Okay.
And also, we strongly believe that putting on our inclusivity lens, the intergenerational lens, is something we should actively focus on.
Mm. Okay. Is there a correlation between climate change and mental health?
Absolutely. So often when we speak climate, we speak about the visible impacts, like, you know, mm-hmm. Property loss or health impacts, or, you know, the biodiversity loss around us. These are the visible impacts that we speak about. But there is a greater challenge, which is a silent disaster that we would like to call it. That is the impact on mental health mm-hmm. of scores of people. As I said, the vulnerability layers are different, like the women and children are impacted more than yes. the men. And then you also have the other gender, the LGBTQIA+, or the most vulnerable of the society who don't have the social security umbrella helping them.
Mm.
So we need to address them not in silos, but in an integrated manner.
Mm.
So that, you know, the policy and the support reaches to everyone. So coming back to your question of climate health, or the climate disasters impacting mental health, yes. So let me put it this way, you have direct visible impact and indirect impact. So when I say direct, when some disaster sets in, like flooding or forest fires, landslides, we can immediately see how it impacts the, mm-hmm. The victims.
Mm-hmm.
And the system kicks in with the rescue rehab measures. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole lot of people pouring their resources into support. But you have a silent stress setting in the case of like fishers, farmers, over the course of time when the heat increases, mm-hmm. the seasonal patterns of rain changes, their livelihood is impacted gradually.
Right.
So often this invisible stress is not seen or kind of addressed in time.
Mm-hmm.
So that mental health impact also has to be factored in. People are recognizing this more now when systemic measures are, participatory measures are kicking in, but it's a long road still.
Yeah.
So we, under our addresses, capacity building or community programs, mental health stands out as one clear vertical
mm.
because better resilience falls on the foundation of strong mental health.
Right. Wow.
So that is something we focus on very strongly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Deepa, you've been mentoring for years. Why do you think it's important to be a mentor?
Whatever we learn over the years of our life or our living,
mm-hmm.
that kind of molds us into a person with a lot of experiences, skills, learning, and also, you know, that energy that you carry.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel a full cup has to kind of pour over and give it to others.
Mm-hmm.
So inherently, if you have a set of skills, knowledge, it could be incomplete even.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, you know, you need not be a perfect mentor,
mm-hmm.
but if somebody has that energy level, the facilitative spirit in them, it is very important because there is a large, set of a population and brothers and sisters out there who would benefit from it. So mm-hmm. if you are in a position of being able to use your skills, it need not be often, you know, it need not be a profession. You could find to be a time to be a volunteer mentor also.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a huge need for mentors. That is one area. But the second one is, I wouldn't call it, you know, the feeling good factor or the joy of giving. But beyond that, one clear thing I have understood as a mentor is that the more I mentor, the more I learn,
mm-hmm.
the more I grow as a person, the more, nuanced and better human being I be.
Right.
Because, as I said, we are all imperfect. So we grow more as a mentor because often we fail as a mentor also. It's not, a mentor is not always perfect and successful. You also fail at times.
Mm-hmm.
So accepting that and growing more is something no other space can give you, because any other profession of which is kind of, you know, financially productive or paid back profession will not give this this space, because here since you're putting yourself out there, you are also vulnerable. So but then how you mentor is also important. You should be open to learning. You should be open to being vulnerable, listening. Mm. Sometimes it backfires. So then you put out yourself out there, and you also learn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So have you had mentees come back to you saying thank you, that that they've learned so much from what you've taught them, and they've now put out to the world that they can mentor themselves?
Yes, that is one of the happiness questions that drive me. I have so many youngsters who have now families. They have out there and, from secure job, they have tried innovative enterprises, and they are in the early phases. So when they call back and telling, I am now in the sustainable space, I am mentoring others, I am trying out some technology for the better of society. This is something which, makes my heart and soul warm. So I get a lot of calls. I have, them coming seeing me with their children. Mm-hmm. And I have youngsters calling me randomly telling, I am in the city, when you come here, please call me.
Oh.
So this is something, I get to carry.
That's wonderful.
All the time, and I'm happy about it. Yeah,
that's wonderful. And it's funny because you're, you didn't really set out to be a teacher, but you did, because you really wanted to keep learning. And, you learn, like you said, you learn from your mentees as well. And I think that's wonderful, because you never stop learning, and hopefully you never stop learning, because, there's always something else out there that's new, or something that you would want to learn about and learn from. So that's really cool.
Yes, because right now, my kind of young cohort or my young team, they are teaching me AI, to use technology to make my life better.
Yeah.
I've never been a screen person, but now I'm kind of, learning the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been a diary person, write it down, journal. But now I'm kind of, to make my time more manageable and more efficient, I'm learning this from them.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's quite an enjoyable.
That's wonderful. So who would you credit for where you are now?
So a whole lot of people. So first, I would pat myself, because, I definitely took a giant leap of faith, thinking I should do something after a low phase in life. So yes, accepting myself and acknowledging my role in making myself happy is something I should always celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
So, but secondly, all the allies who have walked with me in this travel journey called life, my family, my inner trust circle, friends, also my co-founder, my team, and I said all the youngsters who I've been working with till now and still work with, all of them have had a role to play in my of curating or molding my life journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't take one name, but I would say everyone I've met, everyone I have worked with, or even kind of conversed with randomly, have put some seed of kind of change in me.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, first and foremost would be family and my team. Yes.
Okay. So what's next for Deepa?
Last few years, I've taken up traveling at least once or twice a year, going to the mountains or going to random state places. I want to keep doing that. I focus on my health, and yes, maybe find time to create a strong second line leadership who can take up the mantle soon, so that I can sit back and mentor and find more people to converse with.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I look forward to. But yes, you never know what life throws at you. But yeah, I would want to be able to accept that wholeheartedly. Yeah.
And continue to mentor, you said, right? Continue to mentor.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's great.
Yes.
Okay. So what are your goals for Sustera?
Do something consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Transformatively, it could be taking up a small community and working with them for a longer time, but ensure that we have stuck there enough to show huge transformation, which can be a scalable, replicable program. So right now, till now, we were focusing on capacity building. Now we are looking at such community engagement for a longer haul.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to kind of put my energy and all my, you know, skill sets there, and also work with my team in engaging force in this line.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside, I also want to kind of create circles of conversations where women can kind of come together, her spaces rather,
mm-hmm.
where women from different you know, spaces, they could be vulnerable, they could be kind of who are more strong, who could lead the such circles, coming together and finding, you know, that shoulder where they can maybe sometimes vent, sometimes where they can facilitate, sometimes where they can just be silent and hold each other.
Mm-hmm.
But creating, I want to look at creating such her spaces going forward.
Yeah. Wow, I love that. So if anyone wanted to know more about you and Sistera Foundation, how would they go about it?
Yes, so we are present on all the media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Insta. So the Sistera _ org on Insta, it's Sistera on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you could just message us, reach out to us, any one of us in our team. We are open to conversations, collaborations. We strongly believe in working together because climate is something which nobody can, you know, work alone, alone in, or focus to change it suddenly alone.
Right.
So we need a lot of collaborations. We need a lot of, you know, we need a lot of friendships to hold ourselves because this space is not easy.
Yeah.
Building resilience, because every day the heat is going up. Every day we see a lot of biodiversity changes. We see, you know, disasters hitting us back to back. So we need a lot of friendship to hold forth and, you know, walk together, to spread some cheer when the larger canvas is not so, what do you say, I won't say the word, not happy, but it's more challenging. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as you were speaking, I was like, I was being reminded of, like, today is really cold by me, and we've had so many, you know, so much difference in temperatures, like, if not daily, like weekly, it could be warm one day, and then the next week, it's like snow. You know, it's like, it's insane how, like, it just has changed so much, you know, like, over the years, like, and it's like really crazy how, you know, it's and it seems to be getting worse, and it's like, oh, you know, I don't know.
It's visible more because even when I go to schools, lower primary, the younger ones, they are also now able to say, they won't maybe directly say climate or global warming, but they're saying it's heat is increasing, I'm not able to play out more as I did last year.
Mm.
You know, they're telling my pet is falling sick more.
Wow.
So they're able to, you know, we get data, you know, at each age level. Women telling, you know, of their challenges, how, you know, mostly the street vendors, when I converse with them, they are like, we don't drink water because we don't have the public toilet facilities, but the heat is impacting us bad. So we are not able to vent as many days as earlier. So all that, you know, the data that we get in the course of our work is connecting directly to the visible and invisible climatic changes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, infrastructures. Infrastructures are definitely, you know, affected by climate change, and we don't realize it until it's like, oh, wait. And it's like, what do you mean? And it's like, oh, okay. In case something happens, you know, you may not have water, you may not have power, you know, and it's all connected. So.
Yes. So, yeah, because when we talk climate, we speak about mitigation, we speak about adaptation. So mitigation is something where, you know, reducing the carbon emissions, it is more of technology, infrastructure intrinsic, more governance dependent.
Right.
But also mitigation is one thing where even if we are mitigating by planting more trees or mangroves or, you know, more greening the landscapes, if someone else is emitting elsewhere, it doesn't balance at all. So we strongly believe that adaptation, helping the community at local, hyper-local levels to build their resilience is more important right now, because the solutions have to be hyper-regional, hyper-local. And that is where the working with communities to make them more resilient is very important nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you. Okay, so is there anything you would like to say to my listeners?
Yes, I would. I'm sure everyone who's listening has their own passion, has their own, you know, goals or dreams. But I'm sure most of us are also now very empathetic beings, and I'm sure everyone who's listening has their own way of giving back to the planet or the society they are part of.
Mm-hmm.
So I would again encourage you to go a mile or a step more, engage yourself more, put yourself out there more, be vulnerable so that, you know, you can volunteer or mentor and find some more time. If you're doing maybe an hour a week, make it maybe 2 hours a week, but put yourself out there more, give out more so that somebody, you never know who will need that at some point of time. Even we need help at some point of time.
Right.
So maybe giving a little more, making yourself available a bit more. That is what I would like to say. And, you know, never be afraid of being vulnerable, because I think vulnerability helps us grow. So, and, you know, never kind of shy away from sharing your skills. You might feel shy. You might feel, am I good enough to do that? But that is, you know, putting out to yourself there is what will make you learn and find your core strength. That's how I evolved. Even now, I have days when I am kind of scared. Like, you know, I have, technically, I don't have degrees the other scientists have. So who am I to speak about climate change? But then I understand that I need not be an expert. I can always speak from a level of where I'm a concerned parent.
Right.
I'm a concerned being. And then I can, you know, do that accordingly.
Yeah.
So you can work, you can volunteer from whichever level you are at.
Right.
We need not be perfect practitioners, we need not be perfect mentors. It's more important that we be there for somebody or, you know, others.
And I mean, you've had life experiences. You know, well, we all have life experiences that we can actually share with others, and, you know, who knows, they may or may not relate to us, but at least you're putting it out there, right? Like you're saying.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And also, and an interesting thing I found that in all these kind of, what do you say, conversations, the relationships that I've built along my journey, it has helped me grow so much. It has brought me so much happiness that I would definitely say, whatever you do, being part of a larger society, giving out will only help you kind of help you back so much more.
You're right. Okay, so if you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, would there be one?
Oh, nothing. It's been quite a journey for me.
Okay. So, okay, and if my last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Yes. One thing I would have definitely encouraged my younger self to do is I should have started traveling earlier. Because there's so much to explore around us. And yes, that would be one advice I would give my younger self. I should, you know, travel early. And also, yes, maybe I should have learned swimming earlier. Because I'm trying to, but yes.
Oh, how cool. I love that. Well, Deepa, thank you so much for coming on my show and for sharing your life and your work with me through Sistera. And, you know, I love what you're organization is doing, your foundation is doing, because, you know, the conversations that you're having with your community makes a big difference, and it actually branches out to different to other communities and globally. So I appreciate all the work that you and your foundation is doing. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Tess, for having me here. And as you rightly said, we are trying to do what we can, but even a half an hour or 45 minutes is not enough to tell our whole story or, you know, kind of talk about climate itself.
Yeah.
I was just relating in a personal way with what I am doing. So if anyone wants to connect to us, most happy connect to me through LinkedIn. I'm sure you will share, tag me. So please connect to me. Okay. We could have conversations, and I would love to learn, I mean, listen to experiences of others who are, you know, have to share about what they are doing at their community level.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for that, and I will keep in touch. And with that, have a great evening. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Yes, you too. Have a great evening. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Deepa Ananth on RevWomen.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in every other Thursday for another episode of Revolutionary Woman. You can listen to Revolutionary Woman on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast. Just a little note, I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break from being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.